Starting at the top of Yud Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to continue at, looking at the Mishnah, at the two dots. The Gemara says, Meid lo meit. So if the Kohen Gadol has one of the relatives that he would otherwise be mitabel on, the Gemara wants to know, what does he have to do in that case? It's Machlokes between Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, whether he's allowed to leave the Mikdash, or whether he has to remain in the Mikdash. So when I say, San Rabbanan, Umin Amigdash, lo yitze. Right? Lo yitze imahen, al yotzehu acharehen. So the way Rabbi Meir learns it is, okay, he cannot leave the Mikdash, right? Imahen, right, is with them, but he can go after them. And that's what he suggests in the Mishnah, that every block that they appear in, he has to be at least a block behind, so that he's not close to the action, close to the funeral procession. Ketzad, him nichasin, when they are hidden, I mean, they've already turned the corner, who nikle, he's allowed to appear on that block. Hey niglin, if they're on this block, who nichsed, then he does not yet appear on this block. Biyotzead petach, a year, he goes out until the gates of the city, and then Rabbi Yehuda responds and says, what do you mean? He can't leave the Mikdash. It says, Mina Mikdash, lo yitze. So Gemara says, Shapir kamer Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, what's the question here? Rabbi Yehuda is reading the pasuk correctly. How could it be that you would even learn it any other way? So I'm lechol Rabbi Meir, hi hochi, deveto namilo. When it says, Mikdash lo yitze, it means that he can't even go home. Meaning that you can't take the pasuk literally, because otherwise you would have them be living in the Mikdash. That's not what the purpose of the pasuk is. So, Elachi Kamar, that's what it means. Min Mikdash lo yitze, Mikdushato lo yitze. Min Mikdash doesn't literally mean the Mikdash itself, but rather Mikdushato, that he's not allowed to leave his Kedusha. How would that be? What's a Pagam in his Kedusha? Pagam is Kedusha because he becomes Tameh. If he becomes Tameh, then it ruins his status, it ruins his Kedusha. So, Kevin Deet Lehekera, lo ati the Mindra. So, the problem is that we don't want him to come Tameh from the Tsar or from the being metapel in the mate or being involved in the funeral procession. So as long as he makes some sort of heker that will indicate to him that he has to keep his distance, then we don't worry about it. And that's exactly what Rabbi Meir suggests. That they turn the corner, he runs behind them. He's running significantly or sufficiently behind them that it won't come to a problem. So Yehuda says, no, that's a, right, because of his sorrow, and because of the circumstances and the situation, we still worry about the fact that he might come in contact with the mate. I mean, despite the fact that you've made the heker, the emotions might be so overwhelming that we worry about the fact that he might actually become tamei, and before we don't leave him, we don't even let him leave the mikdash. He must remain in the mikdash. Right now, the next sugi has to do with the nikum avelim. The Mishnah lays out, or they lay out two possibilities. One is where he's minachem acherim, possibly when he is consoling others, and the other tzad was when others were consoling him. So now the Gemara lays out, how is this done? Tanu Rabbanan, kushehu over b'shura lenachem et acherim. When he walks in the shura to console others, skan umashuach shavar b'mino, the skan of Kohanim, and the mishuach shavar, someone who had replaced him at some point when he was tamei, started on his right. V'rosh beit av, the head of his section of Kohanim, the Rosh Beit Av, ve'avelim, ve'chol ha'am mismalo, and the avelim and the am are on his left side. So now, over here, happens to be that there is a, there are two things just to note over here. Today, or what we do today, is that in the way we set up a shura after a funeral, we set up a shura where the menachamim, those that are consoling the avel, stand in two rows opposite each other, and the avelim walk through the menachamim, and they are menachem the avel. Over here, the Gemara is clear that it's the opposite way around, that the avelim are stationary, it seems, and the menachamim pass in front of the avelim who are stationary. So that's a first difference to note. The other issue is, where do the avelim stand? Happens to be that the Rambam quotes our Gemara Lalocha, and the Gemara, when the Rambam quotes this Gemara Lalocha, he quotes it that the avelim stand on the left side, meaning that the menachamim are on the right side and the avelim are on the left side. It's not clear to me exactly how to picture this, but it seems that the avelim would be stationary, and almost, it feels like a little bit, you know, the troop parades, you know, that they put on in Iran and all these places, these where they have the big military, that they walk down the roads and you have rows of soldiers that are walking by the grandstand, somebody standing there. it feels like a little bit like that you have the Avelim that are stationary, and the other Nachamim are passing by, and they're rows of them. I mean, it's not just, you know, and then each, as they pass by, they give Nichum Avelim in front of them, these rows of individuals. That's how I pictured it in my mind. So here he says, the Rambam passing like that, it's on the left side. The Rambam Tur brings and quotes the Ramban, the Ramban says that the Avelim are actually on the right side of the Menachamim. The Shulchan Aruch does not quote it whatsoever. It doesn't quote the whole Minhag whatsoever. So it's interesting today, we'll see that the word changes in the Shura. It's interesting today where our Minhag came from. By the mere fact that the Gemara's Minhag seems to be slightly different. When it comes to him, when he's standing in there with the, as the Avel, who's stationary, and others are granting him or giving him consolation, then Skan Mimino, the scan's on his right side, Barosh Beit Av, Becholam Mismalo, and everybody else is on his left side. Aval Meshuach She'avar Lo Ati Gabei. The Meshuach She'avar does not come to console him or does not stand near him. Why? Ma'itam Mechal Shodate. Because we're afraid that it'll cause him some pain. Sabar Kachadibi. Because he thinks he might be a little happy that something bad happened to him. Because the Meshuach She'avar is looking for an opening, right? There's only one job opening for the Kohen Gadol, and he's in there right now. So the Meshuach She'avar is a little bit, he thinks he has a sense of competition with him, and so he might think that he's getting pleasure out of something bad happening to the Kohen Gadol, because then he'll get the job, he'll get the position. So we don't allow the Meshuach She'avar to be a participant in this process, because we don't want the Kohen Gadol to feel any affront by the individual. So Amar Papa, from this brisa that we just brought down, this Tosefta, we can conclude three things. One, Shmamina, Hainu Skan, Hainu Mimuneh, that the Skan and the Mimuneh are the same person. Why is that? Because in the brisa over here, it says, when the Kohen goes, it says that he has the Skan and the Meshuach on his right side, and the Rosh Beit Av and the Avelim on the other side, whereas our Mishnah, when it quotes the exact same circumstance in the Mishnah, it actually quotes that it's not the, as we call it here, the Skan, but rather the Mimuneh. Because here in our Mishnah it says, Kushu Menachem Acherim Derkol Am Ovrim B'Zeh Chazev Amuneh Mimatz'o Beino Levein Am. So who's this Mimuneh?
And there was no Bechlam, and in our Mishnah there's no Meshuach.
Right. So that Tosfos asks, very good. So the Tosfos asks in our Mishnah, how do you know it's the Gemara is assuming that, okay, if it says Mimuneh is Mimino in the Mishnah, and here it says Skan Mimino, they're the same person. Well, what about what David just raised, which is our Mishnah that doesn't mention Meshuach She'avar. And yet Meshuach She'avar is mentioned over here, so why don't you just say Meshuach She'avar is equal to Mimuneh? So Tosa says that Pshita, the Lomikre Mimuneh. Tosa says that that's obvious, that Meshuach She'avar is not going to be called a Mimuneh. The second thing we conclude is, Shmamina Avilim Umdim Cholam Ovrim, which is what I just discussed with you, with the Shura, is that the Avilim are stationary, and the consolers, those of Menachemim, pass in front of them. Again, the opposite of what we do today. Ushmamina, Avelim the small Menachemim, that the Avelim are on the left side of Menachemim, Neumdim, they're standing, meaning that they're stationary, and the Shura and the Menachemim pass forward, pass through, and give them consolation. Again, the opposite of what we do today. As Rashi describes over here, B'chol Am Ovrim, Ish, Shigeitz El Avel Menachemo, Bover. Each time, each person who passes by gives the Tanchumim, and then he passes by. Ukusho Ver, Lenachem, Begabim Mitnachem, Tani, Kusho Meid, Beshura Leitnachem. They are walking by to give this nechama, and it's umdim bishura, they come by in these lines to do it, which is a little bit like what David was describing. Almost sounds like the president on Chol HaMoed when people go in to wish them one by one. Although from the Gemara's, other Gemara's, we know that the shurot had some depth to them, because the Gemara has different dinim about who can say Shema, how close are you to the Avel in terms of your ability to say Shema when you're passing by in the shura. So that depth of, there seems to be some depth to the line. I mean, the number of people would come forward and they would all wish, you know, be Menachem the Avel, and then they move on, next line comes forward. So those are the three conclusions we get from this. Now, so this is going to describe what we do today. Exactly what we just described here. The Avelim are stationary, and everybody passed by. Obviously, this led to fighting. Why did it lead to fighting? Zotomeret ani over tchila. I mean, that there's a certain amount of kavod that is afforded to the parties that go first to console the Avelim. Meaning that those that have stature, the Rabbanim, they go first to console, and then the Sharam. So these two families got into an altercation about who was more important and who should go first. So itkinu sheha am omdim, va'avelim ovrim. So they did what we do today, which is that the Am would be stationary, and the Avelim would pass through the Shirot, like we do too. So that, again, this describes, although nobody brings it, Halacha, this describes what we do today, which is that we make two Shirot, and then the Avelim pass through the Shirot in order to be in Mitachim. Very good. So that's interesting that nobody brings Halacha this second, you know, the new version of what the Shua was. And I told you that Rambam quotes it from above, from Gemara. Ramban quotes it in reverse. The Tur who quotes the Ramban quotes it in reverse. It's the Avelim on the right instead of the left. The Shukrach does not bring it whatsoever. And the interesting thing is that the next Gemara seems to be Amar Rami Bar Abba. So Rami Abba exir Rabbi Yossi at Advar Yoshno B'Tzipori. And Tzipori brought back the original Minhag that the Avelim were stationary and the people would pass through. Right? Sheyu Avelim Omdim V'Cholo Am Ovrim. That the Avelim would be stationary and the people would pass by. So even after the Takana, it sees that they tried to bring it back to the old way. So again, how exactly are the source for Aminhag is interesting. And as Gedalia just described,
because there's only in Tzipori and everywhere else.
They left it with the new Takana, right? Although nobody brings that, the Halacha. I mean, that's interesting, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it. Nobody brings this Minhag down. And as Gedalia pointed out, by women, where they don't walk through, right? The Minhag is that women do not walk through the Shura. It almost works like in the old way, which is the Avelim are Omdim, and people pass by are Menachem, the Avelim. All right, so now the Gemara continues. Topically, Rami Bar Abba is connected over here, but then we're going to bring a number of memorot about Rami Bar Abba and Tzipori. So I'm Rami Bar Abba, Itki, and Rabbi Yossi bit Tzipori, the same thing about Rabbi Yossi and Tzipori. Shlote, Isha, Malachet, Beshuk, Ubna, Acharea. That a woman can't walk through the Shuk, and her child will be after her. Meshum, Masa, Shehaya. Because of an incident that happened, what's the incident that happened? Rashi quotes the incident over here. Sheganvua pritzim me'acharei. He was kidnapped from behind her. I mean that he was behind her, so she didn't see this. They kidnapped her. Venua bebeito, and they brought him to their house, to safe, whatever their safe house, whatever they want to keep him. Mushkazra loradua itchila tzuaket upucha. This woman, after she saw he was missing, started to cry. By Achad Mehem, one of these kidnappers came and said to her, "Boy, Verenoch, like we have him. You want to come and see him?" It was a trap. They trapped the woman by bringing the child over there, and they trapped the woman, and that led to a unpleasant outcome, led to a rape. So just because of Ma'aseh Shehayah, they said to keep your kids in front of you and not behind you, meaning that know where they are, so they don't get kidnapped in the Shuk. At number three, which is Amar Rabbi Arba, Hitzkin Rabbi Yossi B'Tzipor. Again, the same thing here, that Rabbi Yossi B'Tzipor. Shiyu, Nashim, Misaprot, Ubeit HaKisei, Mishum Yichud. The women are allowed to speak. Even though in January we have the Loch has brought the Gemara and Brachot, that when one is in the Beit HaKisei, they should not be conversing. Nevertheless, they were matir, the women, that they could speak to one another when they were in the bathrooms. Why? Now the bathrooms are out in their day, out in the Sadot. They were in isolated areas where they go out to the Sadot. So the fear is that if a woman goes out there, there's a problem of Yichud out in the Sadot. So how do you prevent Yichud, or how do you prevent there being a problem? The women go out together, they're able to talk. When they're in the bathrooms, they're able to talk to each other, and that prevents the problem of Yichud. So that was the takana that he established in Tzipori. Amar Rabban Asher bar Ivat Shilit et Rabbi Yoshia Rabba Bebeit Ilmim Tehutza. I had a question that I asked Rabbi Yoshi Rabba in the cemetery of Hutzav Amarli, and he said to me, "Ein shura pchuta miyasara b'nei yitam." There's a shura is not less than 10 people. Ve'ein avelim in aminyan, and the avelim don't count towards that shura. So ben she'avelim omdim v'chalu amarmim. It doesn't matter whether the avelim are stationary and the people are passing by, or ben she'avelim ovrim, or if the avelim are moving through v'chalu amomdim. So the shura, right, the shura that's established here is the shura, either way we do it today, which is the shurot on the two sides and the avelim pass through, there have to be a minimum of 10 people to create these shurot in order that the avelim pass through. And the other way around, when the avelim are stationary, they have to be at least, right, 10 people in the shura that are going to pass in front of the, avelim themselves. Now again, whether 10 means that they have to be a single file, they're going to pass by 10 of them, or what I was describing before, possibly that there's depth, you know, that they have to have, you know, there could be 5 or 10 deep, and they pass by it once, and they wish to have Elim. I'm not sure which of those two is the right description of what it took place over here. Right now, the Mishnah continues, the Gemara now continues to dissect the Mishnah. It says, Keshumit Nachem, right, when then he is consoled. See, by the who, Kim Nachem hu achrine heche amar. Our Mishnah tells us the formula for when others come to console the Kohen Gadol. They say, "Hare anu kaparatcha," right? We are, you know, atachat you. We are kapara for you. But then when the Kohen Gadol goes to wish others, what does he say? What is the consolation he gives? He says to them, what does he say to them? Tashma, v'omer, tit nachamu. You should be consoled. Right? Hechidami. What is, ilema ki menachame achrine lididei? If you say, right, that this is when others are coming to wish him, amalohu ihu, they say to, amalohu, they say, ihu tit nachamu. Right? He should say to them, you should be consoled. Nachasha karami luhu. Right? Nachasha is what? Is a superstition. I mean, that it's something negative that he's going to place. We have these stories with Shmuel and others when they were bavelus, and someone says to them, just wait till it happens to you. And sure enough, right, that happens to them. So we don't, you don't want to be poteach pe the satan. So why, when the Am are passing in front of the Kohen Gadol, would he say to them, tit nachamu, you should be consoled? But we don't want the Kohen Gadol saying that to others. I mean, that's the implication that they should have something to be consoled about, and they're going to end up losing someone. So we don't want that. That can't be the explanation of tit nachamu, is that the Kohen Gadol says to others while he is being consoled, tit nachamu. Ella, must be, ki menachem lachrini, when he is consoling others. Amalu, tit nachamu, shvamina. So it must be that this brisa that says that he uses the word tit nachamu, the only way it describes is that he's speaking to others. And that means that when he comes to console others, he says that, tit nachamu, that you should be consoled. All right. Melech lo dan. So this is what we said before, that Melech is not a brought to din, and he's not a cannot be a judge. Amar Rav Yosef lo shanu el malchei Yisrael. That's only true by malchei Yisrael. Al malchei be David dan ve dani notan. When it comes to malchei be David, they can be judges, and they can be brought to din. Now here we're talking about we're talking about dinei mamonenos. Because in these instances, we saw before, we had the problem, which yesterday we discussed, about that if the king is one of the judges, then we have a problem of being soter, the king. You're not allowed to undermine, or you're not allowed to contradict the word of the king. So once the king speaks, nobody's going to think otherwise, I'm going to do anything otherwise. When we have a muflash of a Bezdin, when we have the person who is the highest ranking official in Bezdin, there we do it as we have the younger ones, or the lower standing judges speak first, so they will not be overridden or fearful of speaking against the one who is a muflash of a Bezdin. So that we can't do by the king, either because it's still inappropriate, or more likely is that the king, because vote of the king must speak first. For the kavod of the king, he's got to speak first. So if he speaks first, and then he says something, nobody can say anything, then it's no good. So that's what the Tosafot says over here, that here, when we're discussing this, must be dinei mamonenos that we're discussing over here, because otherwise, how could he have the king speak up, and then nobody else can say anything after him? Although the Tosafot says, we do find that they were, the Malchei Beit David were, right, David himself was dan dinei nefashot. So what are you going to say about that? So he has to say, Tosfos gives exceptions to that case. So why David or Beit David in those cases were dan dinei nefashot, but the general rule will be that it won't be for dinei nefashot, only be by dinei mimononos. Dichtiv, how do we know this is true? It says Beit David, right, ko amar Hashem, dino levoker mishpat. Right, so that in the dino levoker mishpat, that they judicate or they come in the morning to do mishpat. And if we do not judge them, if we don't bring them to court, how can they go and judge others? And this is the Itkoshishu v'koshu, which is the member of Reish Lakish. You've got to straighten yourself out first before you go and try to straighten others out. So unless you can be brought to din, there's no way you could judge. And the Pasuk tells us that the Malchut Beit David, Dino Labuki Mishpat, tells us that they can sit in judgment, that they can be judges. Then it must mean that they can also be brought to din, they can be brought to court. So, Ela Malchei Yisrael, my time alone. Why are Malchei Yisrael not why are permitted? I mean, if Malchei Beit Yehuda, who are really Mechel Beit David, who are the real kings, how come if they can judge and be judged, how come the Malchei Beit Yisrael cannot? Right, so what's the reasoning behind that? Mishum Maaseh Shehaya. That because of an incident that took place, the Avdei Diyanei Malcho Katol Nafsho, one of the servants of Yanei HaMelech, killed someone. So he was brought to din. Amalu Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach, who was the Nasi Nenar, he was really the leader at that time. Turns out that later on, the Gemara in Brachos discusses that he was the brother-in-law of Yanei HaMelech. He was actually married to his sister. Yanei HaMelech was married to Shimon ben Shetach's sister. Later on, Yanei HaMelech was led in a civil war, but basically, which is recorded also in the Miglat Chashmonaim. The Sefer HaMakabim, Sefer HaMakabim records that Yonah HaMelech killed many, many Jews. He led, he was fearful of rebellion, fearful of the Chachamim, and he leads large destruction. One of the things that he did was he actually wiped out. The Gemara in Kedushin talks about how he wiped out the Chachamim. At this point in time, the Chachamim are afraid of him, but Shimon Meshetach is not. The Gemara in Brachos seems to indicate that Shimon Meshetach is a little more afraid at that point in time, because he refuses to come out until he gets a commitment from his sister, from Yonah HaMelech, that Yonah won't kill him. At this point in time, he's still not fearful of Yonah HaMelech, you'll see from the story. Right? So he says, Amar lo Shimon Meshetach Chachamim, tznu einechem bo, vidi donunu. Right? So let's take care of this case. We've got to adjudicate this case. Is Evan killed? He's got to be brought to din. Shachulei avdcho katal nafsha. So he said, listen, your servant killed, right? Shadrei duhu. So he sent the Ebed over to be brought to din. Shachulei ta'ad nami lahocha. You get over here too. You can't just send your Ebed. You got to come with your Ebed. Why? Because it says, v'hu abivalav amrat torah yavo bala shor v'yamod al shoro. When it comes to dealing with issues, with regards to one's possessions, the owner of the possessions must be present in order for the din to be adjudicated. So Zotu over here, this is your Eved, and as Rashi takes it to the extreme, Avdo kechamoro, his Eved's like his chamor, then if you gotta be there for your chamor, you gotta be there for your Eved. Where are you, Yanai Malka? Atav Yotif. So Yanai Malka shows up and sits down. So Amalei Shimon ben Shadach, Yanai Melech, Amod Arelecha. Stand up. V'yidu b'cha. And then let them testify against you. You're not standing up in front of us. Again, you're standing up before the one who created the world. Right? Hashem. So they're going to stand before God. Means that they're not standing because of the Dayanim. They're not standing because of the Kavod HaKort. They're standing because of the Kavod HaKort. Baruch Hu was found in the court. Now, just an aside, Tosis asks a question right away and says, is it really true? Is this really true? Did Yanai HaMelech really have to stand up? He says, Tosfos asks the basic question. He says, we know that a Talmud Chacham does not have to stand when it comes to court. Why? Because you have an assay of Amdushni Anashim, and you have an assay which is Mekavod HaTorah, Kavod HaTalmud Chachamim. You take those two assays, so the assay of Kavod HaTorah is Adif, and he can sit down. So why don't you say the same thing by a king? A king, there's a din of Som Tassim Alecha Melech, that you have to give kavod to the king. If you have to give kavod to the king, then why can't that be adif? Why shouldn't that be override Amdushnei Anashim? And you know how I'll prove it to you? I'll prove it to you because a Talmud Chacham can be mochel b'kvodo. He can be mochel on his honor. A king is not allowed to be mochel on his kavod. Melech shemochel b'kvodo enu machol. He's not allowed to be mochel on his kavod. So I can show you the kavod of a king is even stronger than the kavod of a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because a Talmud Chacham can waive his rights to kavod. A king cannot waive his rights. So Tosfos gives an answer. It's a very interesting answer. Tosfos says that the kavod afforded to a Talmud Chacham is different than the kavod afforded to a king. It's a very, very important concept. Which is that the kavod afforded to a Talmud Chacham is because of the Torah that he learns. That kavod is owned by the Talmud Chacham because we have this, the Gemara, in other places, Darshan's the Psukim from Tehillim, that in the beginning, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, "B'tchila nikreit al shmo shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, l'sof nikreit al shmo." In the beginning, when a Talmud Chacham learns Torah, it belongs to Hashem. In the end, when he becomes a Talmud Chacham and he acquires the Torah, it becomes his. Because the Pasuk says, "Im b'torat Hashem chevtzo, ube Torato, his Torah yegeh." So it switches from Torat Hashem to Torato. So that switch from Torat Hashem to Torat Tov makes it belong to the Talmud Chacham. So the reason the Talmud Chacham being mochel al kvodo is because he owns the Torah. It's his kavod to decide whether he wants to be mochel or not. That does not indicate a lower form of kavod or less of an assay of kavod. It might be that the kvod of Torah is higher. It's just his ability to be mochel becomes the fact that he owns the Torah. The king, on the other hand, why does he get kavod? It's because Som Tassim Alecha Melech. I mean, his kavod is derived from the tzibur as a whole. It's derived from him being the king over the tzibur. The fact that he is the king of the tzibur is grants him kavod, and he doesn't have a right to waive his kavod. It doesn't belong to him to waive. So he's not allowed to waive it. So Tosfos says, despite the fact that the kavod seems to be give a higher ranking to the melech, that's not true. Talmud Chacham has a higher ranking. The reason it can be mochel is a separate issue, is whether they own the kavod or not. There are others. The Ran brings down, others bring down different answers. One of them is, what's the whole reason that you have to stand in court? You have to stand in court is because of Kvod Hashem and Kvod HaTorah. So by a Talmud Chacham, where it's Kvod HaTorah to stand for the Talmud Chacham, or it's not Kvod HaTorah for him to have to stand, over there you can have him sit. because you're in Kavodah Torah, Kavodah Torah, it's not an affront to not standing in the Beis Din. The other possibility where the king's Kavod does not derive from Kavodah Torah. Kavodah King comes from the fact that he is the Melech al Kol Yisrael, and that's not the same as Kavodah Torah, Kavodah Beis Din. So since they're two different forms of Kavod, therefore he's going to have to stand in Beis Din, because he doesn't have what it takes. I mean, Kavodah Torah can be override Kavodah Torah, but Kavodah Melech is not going to override Kavodah Torah. That's another. And the next one is possibility, which the Ran brings down, which is an amazing possibility. He says that Shimon Shetach made a mistake, and he didn't really have to stand. That Yanai HaMelech didn't have to stand, but once Shimon Shetach said he had to stand up, the others on the Beis Din had to go along with it, and we'll see they don't, that they should have gone along with it, because Shimon Shetach was the Rosh Beis Din, the Av Beis Din, and when the Av Beis Din makes a psak, even when he's wrong, then you have to support the Av Beis Din, which we see in other places or other locations that he has to deal with that. Now, Tosfos will give, we'll see in a second, another answer on the next page, which might be relevant, which is that if Amod, with the Issur against having the Balei Dinim, the litigants, sit down, it's only if you make one stand and the other one sits. But if you put both of them and sit both of them down, then that's fine. So over here, again, why does Yanai HaMelech have to stand up? You could just come. You know what? And first of all, over here, what is it? This is a criminal case. In a criminal case, there is no other party. It's a case. It's the case of the state. The state brings a case. In capital crimes, the state brings the case. There's no other party. So why do Yanai have to stand up if, right, there is no other party? I mean, if the whole issue of standing up is that we don't want to show bias to one party, so if they both sit down, it's fine. Over here, there is no other party. So why can't Yanai Melech sit down? So Tosos gives one answer, is Dinei Nefashot Shani, that capital cases are different. Capital cases, the litigant has to stand up, period. It's nothing to do with the other party. That's one. The other possibility, he says, is, right, this is, that Kabbalat HaEdut, right, is like Gemar Din. At the Shat Gemar Din, they have to stand up. When the Beis Din are going to read or going to give the Gemar Din, the litigants have to stand. And Tosfos claims over here that maybe the Kabbalat HaEdut, when the Edim first come to speak, that's the same thing, and they have to stand when the Edim come in the first place, that you have to stand up because it's like a Gemar Din. Tosfos says, based on this, very interesting. He says, based on this, Vim Kang is Yeshli Zayarkesh, based in Khmoshivim Shnebali Dim, Shlo Yeshvu B'Shat Kabbalat HaEdut, V'lo Shvat Gemar Din. Have to be careful that when they bring the litigants to court, that they shouldn't sit down when the Edim come to speak at first, and at Shat Gemar Din. He's to give you a practical halacha. Again, in modern day, in American law, I don't know if it's true in the Israeli system as well, when the foreman of the jury comes out to read they ask the defendant to get up and stand up to listen to the Gemar Din. When you get the Gemar Din, you have to have the litigants got to stand. That's what Tosfos is describing over here. But Tosfos says that extends also to Kabbalat HaEdut, and that's why Yanai HaMelech had to stand over here. Again, different reasons why Yanai might have had to stood over here. Nevertheless, Shimon Shech demands of him that he must stand up. So he says, Amar lo, lo kishutei amara ata, elo kishayu kamashi amru chavei recha. I'm not paying attention to what you say, Shimon Shetach. Let me hear what the other chachamim to your right and left have to say about this. So of course, nifne leyimino, so he looked to his right, Shimon Shetach looks to his right, kavshu p'neyam bekarko, they stuck their head into the ground, in the sand, nifne lesmolo, he looks to his left, kavshu p'neyam bekarko, they stuck their head into the ground. Amalem Shimon Shetach, bali machshavot atem. He says, what, you guys are trying to wiggle out of this? You think you are, you know, that you are not subject to the din, that you cannot be afraid of the Balei Dinim, and you don't have to worry, the Melech comes, and all of a sudden you don't have to worry about the Kvod Hashem, you don't have to worry about the right psakis. Yavo Baal Machshavot, V'yiparem Mechem. Baal Machshavot, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu should come and take retribution on you. Miyad Ba Gabriel, V'chavtan Bekarku, Meitu. So there comes Gabriel and knocks them all out. Potash Amru, Melech Lodan, Velodanin Oto, Lo Meid, Velo Meidin Oto. So in that incident, they said the Din King doesn't come because we're afraid that the Dayanim will cower in front of the king. If they cower in front of the king, then we're going to end up with a Ivuta Din, and that's why we don't want it for the king. Now it applies to Malchai Israel. It's interesting here. Who was Yanai HaMelech? Yanai HaMelech is from the Shoshalat HaChashmonaim. He's not from Malchut Beit David, but he's classified as Malchai Israel. He's a Melech that's from the Kohanim. Right, it's not like Malchai Yisrael we would think about when it's split, you have Malchai Yehuda and Malchai Yisrael. This is Malchai Yisrael after, in Bayit Sheni, when the Chashmonaim take over, and they are Kohanim that are governing or ruling. So here, the Gemara limits it to Malchai Yisrael, because the Maisa Shaya, and not to Malchut Beit David.
Rather, the king doesn't have to stand.
Okay, well, because what was clear from what happened with this incident with Shimon Shetach was that the other Dayanim were afraid of the king. The problem is that they're afraid of the king. If they're afraid of the king, they're not going to come to the right conclusion. And Shimon, even if Shimon was wrong, the fact they didn't support him because they were afraid of the king shows you that they have fear. If they have fear, they can't be Dayanim of the king. So it's not about Amod or not Amod. It has to do with the fact that they fear the king. All right, now, next. Lo choleitz, lo chotzim. You're not choleitz to the king, you're not chotzim. Again, why are you not choleitz to the king himself? Because what do you have to do? You have to spit. The woman who has to do, he does chalitza with, has to spit in front of the king, and that's beneath. That's beneath the dignity of the king. And Rashi over here says, when it comes to Yibum, Yibum is also gnaihu lo lakom el shem achiv, which is very interesting. Rashi says, it's also a gnai, that if he performs Yibum on his brother's wife, that he should be, have to do, and make him shem achiv, that's beneath the dignity of the king. So that's why we don't do, again, chalitza and Yibum are not performed by the king. Okay, where it says, Ini, is this really true? Right, so this is really, the Gemara here is addressing Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah is that the king wants to perform Yibum, and he wants to do Chalitza, Zachor L'Tov, Tavo L'Bracha. He can't do the mitzvot. He's allowed to, if he wants to do the mitzvot, he can do the mitzvot. So now the Gemara says, wait, Ravashi says that even one who says that an Asi can be Mochel and his Kvodo, that works. Melech Shemachal HaKvodo in Kvodo Machol. A king cannot waive his kavod. Shenemar som tazim alecha melech. Shotei emato alecha. There's a demand of the king that he keep a certain stature because the people have to fear the king. They have to treat the king with a certain manner of kavod. So if anything that's beneath his dignity, he cannot waive his rights. So over here, if it's beneath his dignity to perform yibum or chalitza, then even if he wants to, we're not going to let him do it because it's a violation of som tazim alecha melech. So Gemara says, mitzvah shiny. When it comes to mitzvot, that's different. Why? Because by mitzvot, I would say this, that the king in the end has to answer to a higher authority, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when it comes to mitzvot, mitzvot are that higher authority. So when the king performs mitzvot, even though, quote-unquote, it's beneath his dignity, the fact that he's showing reverence to HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not detract from his dignity in any way. And therefore, it's permissible, according to Rebbe Yehuda, for him to perform the mitzvot, even though generally he's not allowed to waive his kavod. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Gedalia, there's not a problem since he can't perform chalitza and yibum. There's a way to free his sister-in-law. According to the Tanakama there, where he says that a king does not chaleitz velo miyabim, it's possible that the sister-in-law is trapped at that point in time because the king cannot perform yibum or chalitza in those instances.
Also, for him to help.
No.
Because mitzvah shani.
Right. Oh, you mean that? Can he? Behita lamta means that.
So here we're saying mitzvah shani.
All right. Behita lamta means that you have a right to walk away from it. It doesn't mean you're obligated to walk away from it. That's your question. Yes. Yes. I don't think that means he's obligated if he wants to. It's zochel l'tov, right? Over there, you don't have the problem by a king where he can't be mochel kvodo. You have to have the mitzvah shani. Over there, a zaken can be mochel kvodo, and therefore he could do the mitzvah if he wanted to. All right. So now it says over there that you're not allowed to marry the king's widows. Tanya, except for a possibility of that a king, right, the Rabbi Yehuda suggests over there that a king can marry a king's widows. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, Nashim aruyot lo mi beit melech. Right, so the Rabbi Yehuda, women that are appropriate from him for the beit melech, umay ninhu, mei rav umichal. So now, the Braisa here is discussing about David HaMelech. By David HaMelech, it says that he took those that were ra'ui from him from Beit HaMelech. He took from the king's house those women that were ra'ui for him.
And Rabbi Yehuda proves from here that a king is allowed to take the widows of the previous king. David's the new king, Shaul was the previous king, and he can take it. The Chachamim answer and say no, that appropriate from the king's house are not the widows of the king, but rather the daughters of the king.
And who are those? Those are Merav u Michal. And that's Merav and Michal, who were the daughters of Shaul. So there he married them. Shalu, Tamidav et Rabbi Yossi, Heach nasa David shtei achayot b'chayehen. How did David then marry two women, two sisters, while they were still alive? Merav and Michal are both daughters of Shaul. So how is here that, according to this, that David and Melech took as wives both Merav and Michal? So the two answers here. Amalehen, Michal, achar mitat Merav nasa. That they were sequential and not simultaneous. That Michal, he married Michal only after Merav passed away. He married Merav, she passed away, and then he married Michal. Shua ben Karcha omer, kedushei ta'ut ayu lo b'Merav. Comes the incident with Merav, the kedushim didn't go through. So even though technically he married Merav, that only was as a, right, was an accident or something that didn't actually work out. And therefore, when he married Michal, it was a later Michal, but Meirav he was never really married to. So what's the incident? What happened? Shenemar. Because it says in Shmuel Bet Berek Gimel, Tznu na tna et ishti, et Michal, asher arasti li b'me'ar alot plishtim. So give me my wife Michal, who I was engaged to, who I had kiddushin with, from the Mea Arlot Plishtim. So if you go back in Shmuel Aleph, the story is describing, the Gemara is going to bring some of these psukim here, Shaul makes a promise that whoever kills Goliath, whoever takes on Goliath, will be made wealthy by the king, plus he will marry off his daughter to him. So that, who kills Goliath in the end? It's David. So that comes, David comes afterwards to claim his prize, and the king, you know, says that he owes him lots of money, plus he has to give Merab, his daughter, he's going to give to David. But then Shaul is not so happy with David, falls out with David, and then he gives away Merab to Adriel. Gives away Merab to Adriel, who then is married off to Adriel. Then the David says, you know what, I want to marry Michal, or Shaul's younger daughter falls in love with David, and David wants to marry him, and then Shaul comes up with this idea that I'm going to send David into a position where he's going to get killed. He's upset at David. So he says, listen, Michal says, listen, can I marry David? So Shaul comes up with this plan that anybody who kills, brings me 100 or loads of Plishtim will be able to marry Michal. So in this way, he thinks he's going to entrap David. David's going to have to go into the Plishtim, and the Plishtim are going to kill him. But sure enough, David succeeds, and he brings him back, the Mea Arlot, to marry Michal. Then, again, David is marrying Michal, and guess what? Shaul gives away Michal to Palti ben Laish. So he gives him away to someone else. So this incident transpires twice, where Shaul is supposed to give one of his daughters to David, and then he reneges on the deal and gives them to someone else. So that's what we're discussing over here. So the Gemara is now going to set up how by Meirav was it a problematic kiddushin, and by Michal it was a good kiddushin, and that's why he's saying that the problem marrying two sisters was that he never really married Meirav, he only married Michal. So this is Gemara is explaining now. I'm just giving you some background, we'll see the psukim now. So Nemar, Tzna et ishti et Michal sherasti li b'me'or lot plishtim. So here, after, of course, the death of Shaul and Yonatan, Mephibosheth is the king, he says, listen, give me back my wife, who I married for Me'or lot plishtim, give me Michal back. So my Talmudah, what's the limud over here? Amra Papa, Michal ishti velo Meirav ishti. He demanded that he get Michal, and he didn't demand that he get Meirav. My, so why? What is going on? Kiddush Taot, right? So they, why? Because it was, what was the, Kiddush Taot? What were the Kiddush Taot by Meirav? It says, Vayish asher yekenu yashrenu amelech osher gadol. It says, whoever kills Goliath will be made rich by the king. Azo katle, David went ahead and killed him. Amalo milve itlecha gabai. I have a loan with you. So it didn't work. I mean that the Kesiv Kiddushin was actually the money that was owed by the king to David HaMelech. David HaMelech won, killed Goliath, so he was supposed to be, right, he was supposed to be enriched by the king and then get his daughter. But what was the Kiddushin? The money that he was going to use for the Kiddushin was the money that the king was going to give him. But the king had yet to give him the money. So that was a milva, that was an outstanding loan. And we know from the Gemara in Kiddushin that a Mekadesh Mevilva ain't a Mikudashet. So Azal Yavad Adriel. So Shaul goes ahead and gives away Merab to Adriel to someone else. Tichtiv. But he be'eit tated Merab Bachul to David. At the time that he was supposed to give Merab Bachul to David, he goes and gives him away to Adriel instead. So Michal. So you know, Shaul says, hey, you know, maybe you want to marry Michal instead. Zil Aitali Meir Alot Plishtim. Go and get for me 100 or Lord Plishtim. Again here, Shaul's trying to entrap David and have him killed. Azal Aitile. So again, David succeeds and brings him back to Arlot. So Milve Pruta Itlecha Gabai. So now the Shaul says, listen, alright, now your Kesem Kiddushin is that you have a Milve, you have an outstanding loan with me, I owe you a lot of money, plus you now showed up with a Pruta worth of Arlot. So Shaul Savar Milve Pruta, when it comes to me, Mekadesh, if a person is Mekadesh with a loan, and with real money, meaning that he has a pruta in front of him, date a milve. But the guy's definitely thinking about the milve, and the kedushin fail because the milve is so much greater, and therefore he really has his date on the milve, and the milve will not work. But David Savar, milve a pruta, date a pruta. David says, no, when it's a milve and a pruta, I'm thinking about the pruta because that's what's going to succeed in the kedushin. So he thought the kedushin went through. Now again, Shaul gives away Michal afterwards. That's why Shaul says that I don't think there was good kedushin. He gives him away to Palti ben Laish. And David thinks it's his wife. But what do you see here? He married twice. He married, tried to marry Meirav and tried to marry Micha. Meirav is a Kedushe Ta'ot because it was Mikadosh from Milve. Whereas the one of Micha was Mikadosh from Milve Pruta. And David says, Allah is Milve Pruta, is Datia Pruta, was a good Kiddushin. So that's what it means that he married. In the end, he married Micha and he did not marry Meirav. There's another opinion that even Shaul agrees that Milve and Pruta is Datia Pruta. Shaul thought that the Orlot were worthless. Since the Orlot were worthless, then he wasn't even have a Pruta to be married with. The dogs and cats would love to eat them, so they have some value. They have at least the Pruta's worth of value. If their Pruta's worth of value, then I have something to Mekadesh his daughter with. Rabbi Yossi, so what does Rabbi Yossi do? Hi, it's not Ishtiat Michal, my Dorish Bey. What does he do with that pasuk? Rabbi Yossi, who says that they were married, right, that they were married sequentially, first Meirav and then Michal, then what does it mean? Tnuet Ishtiat Michal. So Rabbi Yossi Latamei, this is Rabbi Yossi going to. His reason in time, Rabbi Yossi had a Doresh Mikraot Muruvim. He used to be Doresh mixed psukim. Mixed psukim means that he says that it goes on multiple parts of the pasuk. So that means, "Ktiv va'yikach ha'melech et shnei bnei ritzpa bataya asher yodah l'Shaul et admoni v'et mefiboshet v'et ha'chameshet bnei michal asher yodah l'adriel ha'mecholati." So here it says that the king goes ahead and takes right all these individuals, including the five children that were born to Michal, who was married to Adriel ha'mecholati. Whoa, v'chil Adriel netna. Wait a minute, Michal never married Adriel. Who married Adriel? That was Meirav. So, v'alol the Palti ben Laish, not Nidna. She was given to the Palti ben Laish, Dichtiv. V'shaol natan Michal bito, Eshet David, the Palti ben Laish. Right, so it gives over David's wife, Michal, he gives to Palti ben Laish. Ela meikish kedushe Meirav la'Adriel, the kedushe Michal la'Palti. Right, so here, since it's mixed up, it has Adriel and Michal in the same pasuk, it's telling you that there's a hekesh between them. Ma kedushe Michal la'Palti ba'Beira. Just like the kedushim of Michal to Palti were not correct, meaning that she was already married to David and it didn't work towards the Palti Adonaiish. After kedushim Meirav, Adriel be'Aveira, they also failed because David was really married to Meirav. So that's the. So his answer is that I'm going to darshan over here that David was married to both Meirav and to Michal. So when it says that nu et Michal ishti, that's not to the exclusion of Meirav, but rather it's that he was married, meaning that he had both of them. Right? He doesn't darshan lo Meirav ishti, but he darshan that they were equivalent. Ma Michal ishti af Meirav ishti. Meaning, just like Michal was my wife, Meirav was my full-fledged wife. And again, Rabbi Yossi then has to explain that he couldn't marry two sisters, so he had to have that Meirav passed away, and then only then did he marry Michal. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, nami aktiv et chamesh b'nei Michal bat Shaul. So what is he going to do with this? Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, what is he going to do with the puzzle that says the Michal had children? Michal didn't give birth to these children. These are Meirav's children. Because we're talking about Adriel. So Meirav yalda, and Michal gidla. Meirav gave birth to them, but Michal brought them up. Therefore, they called her children. Person brings up an orphan in his house. It's as if he gave birth to them. He assigns them. You become the parent of this individual because you brought them up. I mean, parents are not just biological parents. That's a strong statement about that parenting is not just the biological fact that you gave birth to someone, but it has to do with actually bringing up the child. There's a demand of pru to have children or uvu, and then to bring them up. And that that demand means that if someone else brings them up, they become the parent of that child. Rechina says, I learned from here that if someone else brings up a child, that it's called after their name, because it says in Megillat Rut about Oved, right, it says that after Rut gives birth to Oved, it says, Shem Kesham Lemar, Yulad Ben Lanami, it says, Nami gave birth to a child. What do you mean, Nami? Rechina, Nami Yalda, Lo Rut Yalda. Lo Rut Yalda, Nami Gidla, Lefikach Nikal Shema. Since Nami brought up this child, it was called by her name. Yochanan Ar Mihoch, we know from here, it says, V'ishtau HaYehudia. Right, so you did Yada Etz Yered and Avi Gidor is the way it's written in the Divrei Yamim. Right, so it's Ishto HaYehudia. This is talking about Kalev ben Yefune. It says his Jewish wife gave birth to Yered and Avi Gidor. So Ela, and then afterwards in the pasuk in Divrei Yamim it says Ela bnei Batya bat Paro. These are the children of Batya bat Paro. Asher lakach Mored. So Gemara said that Mored took. So this is all in the section of talking about Kalev. So Gemara says Mored ze Kalev. This Mered or this Mered is Kalev. Why is his name? Why is he called Mered if his name is Kalev? Shemarad batzad Meraglim, because he fights against the Meraglim. B'chi batyo yalda, Wait a minute. If you think Batya gave birth to Avigdor and Yered, which are all alternative names to Moshe Rabbeinu, hey, that's not true. Alo Yocheved Yalda. Yocheved gave birth to Moshe. So why is she called after Batya Bat Paro? Alo Yocheved Yalda. Yocheved gave birth to Moshe. Ubatya Gidla. But Batya brought him up. Lefikach Nikral Shema. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is called by his mother's name. Who's his mother? Not his biological mother, but the mother that brought him up was Batya Bat Paro. Right, Abelazar Mar Mi'alcha, we can learn it from here. It says, "Ga'alta b'zroa mecha b'nei Yaakov v'yosef sela." Right, you were able to redeem with your strength your nation b'nei Yaakov v'yosef, the children of Yaakov v'yosef. Yichi Yosef yalad, alo Yaakov yalad. And the Shvatim were not born to Yosef; they were born to Yaakov. Alo Yaakov yalad v'yosef kilkel. The Yaakov gave birth to them, but Yosef sustained them. Lefikach nekura shmo, if they're called in his name. That anybody who teaches his friend's son Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him. Shenemar. It says these are the children or the generations of Aaron and Moshe. And the only ones that are mentioned afterwards are the Bnei Aaron. Even though Aaron, they were biologically Aaron's children. Nevertheless, since Moshe taught them Torah, right, therefore they were called by his name. So it says, again, the reason, says to Beit Yaakov, Asher Padat Avraham, they redeemed Avraham. Since when did Yaakov redeem Avraham? He protected him from the Tsar Gidul Banim. Why? Because he had to bring up the Shvatim. And Avraham didn't. Now you will not be ashamed, Yaakov. Lo ata yevosh Yaakov me'aviv. He won't be embarrassed by his father. Velo ata panav yechavaru. And now your face will not be pale. Me'avi aviv, from his grandfather. And that Yaakov, after what he's gone through, will not have to be embarrassed from his father, his grandfather, because he went through so much in order to bring up the children and bring up the shiftei kah. So Tosis asked the question, wait a minute, who protected Yaakov had to gishtar gidul banim? What about Avram? Avram not only has Yitzchak and Ishmael, he also has the Bnei Keturah. He has a whole series of children as well. So now, what you have to say, that it's not about Tzar Gidul Banim, just bringing up children, but rather the whole issue of the fighting between Yosef and the brothers that takes place, that is that, and that leads down to Yeridat LeMitzrayim. Of that, Yaakov suffered, right, and that he protected Abraham from having to suffer that those consequences or that fighting, and then Yeridat LeMitzrayim. Right now, the Gemara goes back to our issue. It says, "Ktiv Palti Uchtiv Paltiel." Palti ben Laish, who Michal is given to, one place is called Palti, one place is called Paltiel. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Palti Shmo, his name is really Palti, but Lamakov Shmo Paltiel. Why does he have the Shem Hashem added on at the end? Shepalto Kel Min Abeira, God saved him from sinning. Masa, what did he do? Na'atz Cherib Beino Leveina, stuck a sword in between him and Michal. Amar Kol Osek B'Tvarzei Yitaker B'Cherib. Anybody who violates this division over here will be stabbed or, you know, punctured by the sword. Mizder B'Cherib Zev, Aktiv. Wait a minute. Wait, if you think that's so true, that Paltiel stayed away from Michal and he was shomer, that David was the wife, he didn't do anything, but aktiv. It says later on, when David demands that he get his Michal back, Vayelech ita isha, shenaseh la kish, so it says that Vayelech ita isha, that her husband goes along with her. You know, they're bringing Michal back to David, her husband, meaning Paltiel, is falling after her, crying. So it says, what do you mean isha, shenaseh la kisha? Right, so he says, not that she was really his wife, but that she was like his wife. Meaning that wasn't that he actually, they weren't actually husband and wife, but rather he took care of her and he brought her up. Baktiv, haloch ubacho, right? It says that he's crying. What do you mean? Al mitzvah, dazel minei. Oh, he was crying because he lost the mitzvah. Not crying because he's losing his wife, he's crying because he's losing this mitzvah of staying away from her all these years. Ad Bachurim, until the place called Bachurim, Shinaseh Shneem Ki Bachurim, Shlo Tamu Tam Bi'ah. They were both like Bachurim because they had never tasted the Tam of Bi'ah, meaning that they had kept away, meaning that they respected the fact that David had married Michal, and even though Shaul had given her to Palti, they knew that that was wrong, and therefore they stayed away from each other. Rabbi Yochanan Tokfo Shel Yosef, An Ventanuto Shel Boaz. I think we're stopping. Alright, we have to do this tomorrow. Sorry, stop here.